From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the Leonard Lopate Show. I'm Leonard Lopate, and this is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Anthony Shadid, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Middle East correspondent for The Washington Post, is in Beirut covering the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah. He joins us now live from Beirut. It is my great pleasure to welcome him back to my show. But I hear that you're in a very dangerous situation. A bomb just went off near you?
Yeah, I'm actually not at Beirut. I'm down in Tyre in southern Lebanon. And, yeah, just two missiles just struck a city block here, and we're just trying to figure out what happened. So it looks like a pretty grim scene. Four-story buildings just collapsed, and it's still unclear what happened exactly.
Well, I was going to ask you, how much can you actually see in a situation like that, and how much do you learn from press reports? But in this case, you were eyewitness to a blast that killed people?
Well, this happened 10 minutes ago, so the cost is we don't know whether anyone died or not. It's, given the damage, it seems like it's hard to say to find out what exactly happened, but it's two missiles that came into this area of Tyre, which is a Mediterranean port. It's about 12 miles north of the Israeli border.
Your parents are Lebanese, so is this story a personal one for you?
It's difficult to say whether it's personal. I mean, you have to kind of hear these stories and be as professional as possible. And I obviously live here, and I do have a family connection to it. But it's, I think when you get into the story itself, you find yourself, just trying to understand what's happening on the ground as much as anything. And sometimes these stories are so fast-paced, especially this one, where you really basically working around the clock for 2 weeks, that you don't have as much time to reflect as you might otherwise. And especially on this story, I think you get the sense that, the most dramatic events for this country are all going to have to begin after the bombs start, falling.
Has daily life come to a halt all over Lebanon, or are some people still following their daily work routines?
I think this is definitely a war of perspectives in a lot of ways. It's a different story. Even in Beirut itself, you have the southern suburbs of the city, which have been, large swaths of them have been destroyed. In the mountains, beyond Beirut, there's not as much damage, and in a certain tempo of life remains. Where I'm at in southern Lebanon, life has come to a halt in a lot of ways. I mean, the city has been depopulated. Hundreds of thousands of people have left their homes, and bombing is going on quite a bit, especially near the border. Now, Tyre is a city where you hear bombing all the time, but it hasn't struck the city itself, the downtown. So what we just saw with these two missiles hitting is it's bringing the war, very directly to the doorstep of the people who live in this city.
So why are you in a dangerous part of town? Forgive me for asking that. Is that the only way you can cover this story?
Yeah, I think a big part of the job of journalism is witness to these events, and that's what you do. There is a sense that you have to see things to be able to know them and to write about them properly. I guess it's what the best of can do. It doesn't always feel that good, to be honest, but it's hard to cover the story in any other way, I guess.
Well, are people in Lebanon kind of prepared for this? After all, they've lived through years of civil war in the 70s, and then there was the previous Israeli invasion of Lebanon. Are they old veterans of this sort of thing, or is it each time an impossible situation to live with?
I think there's a sense of deja vu for a lot of people. And you will hear, I was talking to this other person the other day who said, I was born in the war and now I'm living through a war again. So I think there is a sense of deja vu that we have lived through this, we have seen this again. There is a sense of having left their homes many times before to flee the fighting. But I also think there's a sense, I think, among at least younger people here, that this war is of a different, what do we say, degree. In respect, it's much more intense than, for instance, Israeli census in 93 and 96. And people do kind of harken back to 1982, although the South is bearing by far the brunt. I think there's also a lot of trepidation, a lot of fear, a lot of unease about what follows in Lebanon. you know, what is the fate of Hezbollah? What is the fate of Lebanon's various factions? And these questions are only now being asked, and they won't really be discussed in earnest, I think, until the, like I said, the bombing actually comes to an end.
Well, this morning, the New York Times is reporting that Israeli troops are finding Hezbollah to be much more difficult to incapacitate than they'd imagined. An Israeli journalist who supports the war wrote in Haaretz, 2 weeks after Israel set out to defeat Hezbollah, its military achievements are pretty limited. How could Israeli strategists have underestimated Hezbollah so much?
Well, I think that's a difficult question. It's, you know, I'm sure Israeli commentators have a better sense of it. I think people here who cover Lebanon understand about the degree of Hezbollah's organization, the degree of Hezbollah's commitment. It's both of these were planned for this for a long time, and knows the terrain, has fought the terrain for 18 years. It draws on a population that's largely sympathetic, especially in towns like Ben Jaber, where a lot of fighting is going on today. It's one of the part of the Lebanese landscape, and it will remain part of the Lebanese landscape, I mean, regardless of how this war turns out. It's also, you know, because of its kind of organic nature in some ways with the southern Lebanese population, at least, it does give it a certain, a certain edge that, for instance, the Palestinians wouldn't have had when the Israelis invaded in 1982.
Well, do you think Hezbollah will be significantly weakened by the end of this campaign, or will it be strengthened?
I'm sure they will be weakened, but, you know, it's the question of what to what degree that weakness is. I mean, Hezbollah can't leave in a certain way, because, really, like I said, it is part of the shared Muslim community here, and shared Muslims, of course, are the largest single group in Lebanon. We'll remain a part of the landscape, there's no question about it. We'll retain its arms. That's one of the things that are going to be very difficult to resolve, I think, is after this fighting ends here.
What are you seeing right now?
Yeah, what I'm seeing right now...
Because we're hearing voices in the background, and they sound very concerned.
Yeah, I'm standing in front of the street strewn with rubble. The cars have their windows broken, and they're covered in a fine film of dust that's blown up in the rubble when the building was exploded. There's people running around. There's working class on the street. They're trying to look for the wounded right now that are buried in this rubble, this four-story building. It's a pretty desperate scene. I think these are scenes that we've seen often in 7-Eleven in the past 2 weeks, with people gathered in the streets just kind of waiting for word of what exactly happened. Everyone knows everybody in these small neighborhoods like this, and there's a certain anticipation, I think, on everyone's face.
And where are you standing? Are you in an apartment, or are you crouching behind a wall?
I'm just standing in the middle of the street. It's probably not the safest place to be, the street, and just so I have to just find out what exactly happened.
Israel has been accused of deliberately targeting civilian areas, but then people like Alan Dershowitz say that Hezbollah has been intentionally putting civilians in the line of fire. What's your experience of this?
Well, I'm going to speak anecdotally, but that's not what I've seen. I mean, I've seen cars being hit on the roads here in southern Lebanon. One was in white minibus with 18 people fleeing fighting in a village. The Israelis had already evacuated. I saw a car bring 3 wounded people down a street. Saw another car with a family of 5 hit. It's hard to sometimes understand why these cars have been targeted. The civilian Lebanon has been almost entirely civilian at this point. There's no question that some of those people were living in houses that may have belonged to Hezbollah members. There does seem to be a lot of injuries, a lot of death. At least for these people, it seems hard to understand why they were being attacked.
My guest is Anthony Shadid, the Washington Post correspondent for Middle East Affairs. He is in Beirut. He's been on the show a couple of times within the past year to talk about the elections in Iraq and his book, Night Draws Near, Iraq's People in the Shadow of America's War. I said that you were in Beirut, but you're in Tyre, or have I misunderstood?
I'm not in Tyre.
You're in Tyre.
In Tyre, yes.
Now, their Israeli reports just came in that they have captured a Hezbollah stronghold. But I'm not exactly sure what all of this means. MSNBC has quoted the Prime Minister of Lebanon as saying that Israel has set his country back 50 years. Is that hyperbole, or have the attacks really structurally wounded Lebanon to such an irreparable degree?
Well, there's no question that the attacks have had an incredible toll on Lebanese infrastructure. Lebanese infrastructure was, of course, one of the things that Lebanese one of the symbols of the rebuilding from the end of the 1990 Civil War. That infrastructure has been laid to waste in a lot of respects, bridges, roads. When you drive down from Bayer to Tyre, for instance, almost every road has been hit, almost every bridge has been destroyed, the sections of it. I think when people say the 50-year idea, 20 years, you often, I think this is a much in anticipation of what may follow again. There's not a good feeling you have on the ground of what the unintended consequences of this war might be. And this is something we see time and again, I think, when countries try to impose a certain ideal on a country that's not their own. I think we saw it with the American invasion of Iraq. I think we may see with the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. What those unintended consequences are often hard to read, of course, ahead of time. But you do get the sense that things play out often in very remarkably different ways than they were expected.
The Israeli government has claimed that its attacks on the population centers of Lebanon are intended to send a message that the Lebanese government needs to police its own country and root out Hezbollah. Does the Lebanese government actually have the wherewithal to do that?
It actually doesn't. I mean, the Lebanese government, Hezbollah, of course, is a part of this Lebanese government. And as politics are in Lebanon, they're very fractious, 18 different religious sects. This isn't often have to be made by consensus. Now, Hezbollah, for better or worse, claims representation of Lebanon's Shia Muslim community. And to lose that representation within a government, the representation of the Shiites, would make a government really a name only. That's the difficulty you face in this. To alienate one of the most significant elements of Lebanese politics, and at the same time, still be a government, a legitimate government. And I think that's the question that the Lebanese government is facing right now. This has been an issue for more than a year. Hezbollah's arms, with the Syrian withdrawal from the country, it's the main items on the Lebanese agenda, and it wasn't resolved through dialogue. Now, will it be resolved by force? It's difficult to see. I think what we're going to see is in some ways a deepening of radicalism among some parts of the community in the aftermath of this war. I think we're going to see a Hezbollah that comes out of this. It's hard to say how Hezbollah comes out of this. I shouldn't say it's speculation at this point, but you know, we're not going to return to the negotiating table any very quickly. I think we're going to be dealing with the legacy of this for months and perhaps years to come.
Well, at the opening of the conflict, some Israelis said, and others, that Lebanese officials will be secretly happy that Israel is doing its job for them by attacking Hezbollah. Do you think that there is some rejoicing within government circles?
Rejoicing is a hard word to use. Maybe it's not the best word to use, it's because the country has been wrecked in so many ways during this fighting. Would there some hope, you know, amid that this might lead to Hezbollah's disarmament, and that, you know, and that Lebanon could take a different path? I think that was expressed as some element for the community, of other communities in Lebanon. I think as this thing drags on, and it's more intense in some respects, especially the fighting in South Lebanon, that's harder to see. I definitely heard that in the first few days after the fighting started. I've heard it less and less since then.
How are the Lebanese hearing about what's going on? Word of mouth, Al Jazeera, or the Hezbollah media outlets?
I think it's all of the above. I think you have Al Jazeera and a lot of obviously the two main Arab satellite channels that have been covering this pretty intensively. The Lebanese themselves have several stations that are often quite good in news gathering. Future Television, LBC, Al Manar. What I find here in southern Lebanon among the Shiites is that you do listen to Al Manar, Al Jazeera, and then also a radio station known as Al-Nur, which also belongs to Hezbollah. They listen to it constantly, and it aggressively covers this conflict. I mean, it's really what they're doing with these round-the-clock coverage of events that are happening outside their doorstep, and sometimes a strange contrast where you'll watch people huddled in a basement, you know, watching coverage of the bombing happening maybe 100, 200 meters away.
Have responses differed across religious and ethnic lines? Are the Druze, for example, reacting differently than the Christian Maronites?
Yeah, I think they are. I think the way you would probably break it down is that the Shiite community, the people who liked Hezbollah before the war still like it. The people who didn't like it before the war still don't like it. I don't know if you've seen any strategic shift among Lebanese communities vis-a-vis Hezbollah. Now, Have those likes and dislikes deepened, perhaps, over the progress of the procession of the war? I think it's possible. But you also have people pointing out that the Lebanese at some level come together in opposition to what's being wrought or what's being played out in this country, given the scale of the damage, given the loss of civilian life, given the number of wounded. it's always, like I said, much greater than what we saw in 1993 and 1996. And so I think we're seeing some popular revulsion across the spectrum on the toll that they're witnessing.
Anthony, this segment was planned for 40 minutes, but I'm really afraid for your safety. Should we end it early? What are you seeing right now? And then maybe I'll let you go and go to a safer place.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to speaking for the full period with you. And I'm looking down at the ambulance right now with a Red Cross crew pulling. I'm not sure if they're pulling somebody out of the wreckage or not, but there's a crowd gathered around them. It does feel a little uneasy here. To be honest, I wish we could do it again, but I probably should get to the story at hand.
Yeah, watch out. Take care of yourself. And thank you so much for being with us again. It really does give me a sense of just how scary it must be. Anthony Shadid, Washington Post correspondent for Middle East Affairs. You may remember his book, we spoke about it last year, Night Draws Near, Iraq's People in the Shadow of America's War. Just one more thing. Does this remind you at all of what was going on in Iraq when you were there?
It goes to an invasion. There are some similarities in invasion. And since I've been having a siege, the bomb strikes, there were scenes that followed bomb strikes. They seemed of anguish and grief, but those were very familiar to me. It doesn't feel familiar to me, it's a sense of ambiguity, people not knowing what follows it. What also feels different, I think, is what does feel different, I think, between those two wars is just the scale of what's going on right now in terms of the population displacement, the proportion of civilians killed, and that type of thing. That is a little bit unfamiliar in some ways.
Anthony Shadid talking to us from Tyre. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for letting me join you.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.